The following content is graphic. Listener discretion is advised. The world has found itself in strange times. COVID-19 is an unseen enemy. But as Jana Goodman explains, you never really understand what this virus is capable of until it claims someone you love.
And I just wish people would stop complaining about not being able to do things or go here or do that and really start taking this seriously so that we can finally get rid of this virus, which has just caused devastation beyond any comprehension.
Jana Goodman lost her high school sweetheart, Freddie Goodman, to COVID-19. He'd just turned 40. But Jana didn't just lose the love of her life. She and her two young children, Tristan, age 8, and Amelia, still a baby at just age 1, had to watch as Freddie's condition rapidly declined, feeling an overwhelming sense of helplessness. Jana shares her story with us.
The next few weeks was like, it was from like a heartbreaking movie. I still can't really come to grips or to terms with any of this, and that this has actually happened. But on Christmas Day, he started feeling lethargic. He was sleepy. By the 28th of December, we knew this was it. We knew he had COVID, even though he hadn't been tested, because he was struggling to breathe. And he had all the symptoms. So on the 28th, I decided to take him to hospital, where it just felt like they weren't prepared at all. It was awful. For a private hospital, it was just terrible. We were left sitting outside in the sun, getting sunburned. There was nothing. There wasn't even a chair. I had to go and look for one. Finally, he got to see a doctor. It must have been 3 hours that it took for them to see a doctor. Finally, the doctor came out and he told me that even though we didn't have the COVID result, that his chest x-ray was consistent with double pneumonia. And he could see from the chest x-ray that it was COVID. You know, I just felt, why did they not admit him at that point? That is COVID or no COVID, double pneumonia is a very, very serious illness. And Freddie was struggling. I knew my husband and I knew. But they sent him home with a bunch of medication. Soon after starting taking the medication, or about a day after, he said to me he was really struggling with heart palpitations, that it felt terrible, that it was the medication that was making him feel even worse. So I looked at the medications and I saw that he was prescribed azithromycin, which is an antibiotic. I knew this instantly because I myself had a reaction to this medication during my stay in hospital. And I then actually did some research and I saw that azithromycin weakens the heart, and that it can actually have fatal side effects because of the weakening of the heart. I consulted with another doctor, a homeopath, who actually said to me that that is the worst medication that can be prescribed to a COVID patient because of the effects that it has on the heart. So it is really the wrong treatment for him. I could not get hold of the doctor who first saw him at the hospital, so I phoned another doctor for advice, and he said, well, he should stop taking the medication and then see how it goes and if he feels any better. On the 30th, he wasn't improving, and if anything, his breathing was becoming short and very rapid. And I said to him, I need to take him back to hospital. I had to get a neighbor to help me, to help him get into the car. And as we had him in the car and I buckled him up, he looked at me and he started mumbling, and he had a seizure right there in the car. I freaked out. I phoned a friend who was also a doctor, and she said I must just take him straight back to Plett Hospital. I, I don't want to, but you know, it was the closest facility and she would phone someone to meet us there. Another doctor then, who was really amazing, this doctor who met us there. By the time they got ready on the gurney, his sats had dropped to 37 and he went into cardiac arrest. They resuscitated and stabilized him, and the doctor came out and told me that he had to be transferred to ICU because he urgently needed high pressure oxygen and they didn't have it there. So the level of preparedness of this private hospital was just absolutely shocking. They didn't have the right oxygen and he had to be transferred. The closest ICU bed was in PE, but we were grateful. We were grateful that we had managed to find an ICU bed, as we had heard of how it was so full everywhere. The next thing was just trauma after trauma. The ambulance company then wasted more than 3 hours of precious time with Freddie's life hanging by a thread because they were wanting authorization from our medical aid before taking him to the hospital. They refused to take him. I offered to pay them. I offered to EFT them the 17,000 rand or whatever it would cost to get him from PLET to PE, but they were evasive and they didn't give us a straight answer. I nearly lost it. Then the doctor came out with the MRI report and he was yelling at the ambulance guy saying, why are you not, this is an emergency, you should not be waiting for authorization, that they have a full medical aid, what is the problem? And he even said, the doctor even said they could send him the bill, but that he showed them the MRI report that there was fluid in his lungs and that Freddie needed to get onto the high pressure oxygen as quickly as possible. It turned out that they didn't have a paramedic and they needed a paramedic to be in the vehicle with Freddie in the back with a critical patient that was required. But instead of transferring it to another local ambulance company who actually had a paramedic, had the correct vehicle and everything right here in PLET, instead of doing that, they wanted to hang on to this business, if you could call it that. Life was not the most important thing here, money was. And instead of transferring it, they then called a paramedic from George, which is more than an hour and a half away in normal situations. During season, December time, it would probably be another 2 hour trip. They wasted time that Freddie didn't have. His life was hanging by a thread. Eventually, he was taken to the ICU in PE. And he only arrived there at about 10 o'clock at night. There, finally, he was in the ICU and we believed he would get the treatment that he needed and that he was in the best place. His doctor there didn't phone me the whole week, despite me phoning about 4 times a day, leaving messages and asking for updates and asking and begging the doctor to phone me with updates. She just couldn't. She was apparently just too busy. So, which I could understand, you know, it's been COVID and that, but it was absolute torture. Every time I phoned the ICU, they would give me a SATS reading and say, your husband is critical but stable. I would get nothing more from them. Eventually, the dietitian phoned on the 8th, the dietitian, not even a nurse, phoned me from the hospital and she said, listen, your husband is critical. His condition has worsened and you need to come through. You need to come through. So somebody took me through and they dressed me in all the necessary clothing, the protective gear, and I was able to stand by his side for his last moments. He was obviously sedated. So I couldn't really talk to him. He had all those pipes in him, but they said that he could hear me. So I just spoke about how much we loved him, his children, and when we were young. And shortly after that, his heart stopped and he was gone. But I tried to resuscitate him. They took me out of the room and I just had to stand outside a glass door. It literally felt like a movie. And I saw the wheels of the bed moving and I knew they were trying to resuscitate him. And they came and they told me the news that he was gone. It was just earth-shattering. It felt like a dream. It felt like I collapsed and I couldn't even deal with it. They had to give me something to calm down. He was a healthy man, thank goodness. He was strong. He was super strong. So I do admit that we didn't really fear the virus much, because we all joked about it and said we should just get it and get over it so that we can carry on with our lives. But that was not the case.
Freddie's 40th birthday was on the 23rd of December. By Christmas Day, the 25th, he began to feel ill. And by the 28th of December, Jana had rushed him to hospital for the first time. Just 11 days after seeking that initial medical treatment, Freddie passed away. Exactly a month after his 40th birthday, his family celebrated the life he had led.
Freddie took to being a dad like no other role before. He was just a natural, except for changing the dirty diapers, of course. From his birth to his first steps, to teaching him how to ride a bike, how to swim, and how to fish, Freddie was Tristan's ultimate hero. Fatherhood fitted him like a glove. They had so many adventures together. And even at age 8, Tristan was still sleeping in our bed. Freddie just used to say he doesn't care what other people think or say. But Tristan, he wouldn't be wanting to sleep there when he was 18. So, you know, when that day comes, that's fine. But for now, we'll just get a bigger bed. And he just loved cuddling with him, which was our thing. At night, we would, as a family, we would cuddle together, watch a movie or read a book. It was our time. It was our best time. But we had our fair share of heartache. After Tristan, about a year after, in the following few years, we suffered 3 miscarriages trying for a sibling. And 2017 was another very difficult year for us. With the Knysna and Plett fires raging through, Freddie volunteered as a firefighter. I remember at one point he didn't sleep or eat for about a week as he fought fires alongside some of his best friends. He would come home with melted tackies and holes in his shirts as they fought these fires with no protective gear whatsoever. Freddie would never hesitate to help another human. He would come home literally pitch black, covered in all the soot and the dust from fighting these fires, but he was just relentless. He kept on going. In August 2017, I lost my father in a very tragic motorcycle accident, and I was absolutely devastated. But once again, Freddie was there for me in every way, to catch me when I fall, as he always did. He helped me through it. I've always struggled with anxiety, and Freddie was the only one who could get me out of that hole every time. Everyone who knew him would tell you the same thing about him. Kind, gentle, the gentle giant of Plett. Always had a smile on his face, no matter what our circumstances. Nothing was ever too much to ask of him. He would welcome anyone into our home and cook them a meal. He was happy to eat baked beans if he could give the steak to someone else to enjoy. The most generous guy, a heart of pure gold, the life and the clown of any occasion, the ultimate dad.
The Goodman family lost. They lost a dad, a husband, a friend, a protector, and a provider. COVID-19 not only took Freddie from the Goodman family, but it also crippled their source of livelihood. You see, the Goodmans own an event company, which was incredibly hard hit from the second the pandemic started.
Okay, so yeah, we started our own events company that we basically then launched in 2011. And it was such an honor for us. You know, our own business was inspired by our own love story, which was so beautiful that for us to be a part of literally hundreds of couples' dream wedding days. It was such a wonderful honor to be a part of so many couples' love stories. And for us, it was always kind of special to know that by helping create these beautiful weddings, we created these most beautiful memories for these couples. And in some way, we would always, and our own story, and we would always be a part of their lives and their happiest memories forever. And that was always such an inspiring thing to us, to just make sure that each and every wedding was just as special as it could be. After the fires, our business confetti events took a huge, huge knock. Weddings were cancelled and no new bookings were coming in. Things were tough, very, very tough. We had to come up with another business to support our family. Hence, our pub Locals was born. Freddie always dreamed about owning his own pub, and we did it. The difficulty in succeeding with that is another story on its own, but we finally got it up and running in about a year's time after it took a long time to acquire a liquor license. It was finally up and running, but barely paid the rent, but we were grateful. Confetti thankfully started picking up again and recovered, and the business was booming by towards the end of 2018. We were so happy to learn that we were then expecting baby Amelia Grace, and our little family would be growing by another little angel. Life was finally back on track. One of our weddings even went on to be aired on Top Billing in 2019, which was such a proud moment. The pregnancy with Amelia was riddled with complications. It was a very difficult one, and I ended up with fourth degree placenta previa. I ended up in Bayview Hospital, Mossel Bay, and I spent 72 days there on strict bed rest until her arrival. Being away from my family was extremely difficult, and we barely saw each other as it was such a busy time for the business, and Freddie just had to hold the fort. He had to, along with my team, he had to do 16 large weddings without me, but with me coordinating remotely from my hospital bed. The nurses would often joke with me and say that my baby would be born with a miniature laptop and cell phone, because I was literally always working until late nights. Amelia Grace Goodman was finally born on the 30th of April 2019, and we were a happy family of four. It was the proudest moment for Freddie to finally bring his little girl home. It was just such a happy time. Life seemed to be so perfect at this point. Like, we have finally overcome all our greatest challenges, and we were so ready for our new chapter of abundance and blessings, as is promised in God's word. As a family have overcome so much, we were so, so grateful. Okay, so then fast forward to 2020, and everything changed in a heartbeat, and I mean drastically. COVID hit China in December, and we were starting to see our first cancellations of China-based clients coming in as early as January. So this pandemic was affecting us way before the country went into lockdown, as 90% of our business comes from international clients. Neither business could generate an income as soon as the lockdown was imposed, and the losses were immense. Within weeks, we had lost literally all of our income for bookings for the next 2 years. It was total devastation. How would we survive? How would our 8 staff members and their families survive? We had no idea. We applied for all the various relief funds, TERS, the Rupert Fund, you name it. Nothing was successful. Family had to start lending a helping hand to us with the little they could, just to put food on the table. Things were really tough. We managed to scrape by just enough just to pay some rent so that we could hold on to our business premises, and our landlords were gracious and understanding, for which we were so thankful. as we were just hearing all these horror stories of people just losing their businesses and being kicked out. We couldn't afford any of the insurance policies, life policies, anything that we had in place anymore. We had to cash out all of our investments, all our savings and policies just to survive and to be able to support our staff during the lockdown. And the lockdown was extended month after month after month. We just didn't know what to do anymore. We were still supporting our staff with whatever we could financially, and the local supermarket offered us assistance with weekly food parcels for our staff, which was such an incredible blessing. For about 2 months they did this, which was just amazing. As restrictions were starting to be eased, we were really hopeful, but the businesses were still suffering immensely. We were hoping for a quick recovery, but that was not the case. People weren't coming out. They were afraid. People weren't planning weddings or events due to all the uncertainty ahead. I was constantly busy with quotations. People would ask quotations, but where my turnaround was usually maybe one in every three quotes that would be accepted, I think I did in excess of 300 quotations with not one being accepted because people were just too uncertain of what was going to happen. So we were really clinging to the hope that December would come and that we would have a bumper season so that locals could at least start generating an income again and that we could try and stuff a few of the holes and start making a recovery. But then the second wave hit. Beaches in the Garden Route were closed, curfews reintroduced, and our hopes and dreams once again hanging by a thread. But all through this, Freddie was my hero. He would encourage me constantly. Every time I would break down and cry in hopelessness, he always found a way to cheer me up and tell me that together we would make a plan, together we would fix this, that we could do this.
The virus has definitely taken its toll on the Goodman family from the get-go. But now, without Freddie, Jana finds herself facing the same financial challenges and the challenge of raising two very small children alone. But luckily, she wasn't alone. Virtual strangers from around the world helped raise more than 120,000 rand for the Goodman family. A close family friend, Elizabeth Vence, known to Jana as Ellie, started a backer buddy campaign to help them out. The target initially was 100,000 rand.
My husband Stefan inspired and encouraged me to do a fundraising campaign for my beautiful friend Jana. We were speaking about how we can support Jana and the children in a bigger way than being there for them. And from what Jana had mentioned in the first 3 days after she had lost Freddie, one of her biggest, almost unbearable burdens was the financial situation and the provision for the future for her and the children. So we realized that she will need lots of support. She's an amazing person who has so much to bear due to that loss. And as Jana and the children will need much more support to be able to build their future without Freddie, the campaign will continue.
Within days, Elizabeth's initial target was exceeded with donations from Germany, Switzerland, and even strangers from right here in South Africa. The money raised will allow Jana to keep fighting for her family. And for that, she's incredibly grateful.
Ellie Vence is an amazing, amazing friend of mine. She's just, God really sent her onto my path. And I can't even begin to express the gratitude in my heart for this woman who just stepped in. They were praying with us for Freddie during his illness. We had groups and we had prayer chains, and everybody just knew that he had everything going for him. He was going to get through this. Freddie's going to fight this thing. Ellie was here daily checking up on me, bringing me food for the kids, offering help for, it was her and my other friend Yolandi. They were just here. So, she started this fundraiser. At first, I wasn't even aware of it. I only learned about it later on, and I was just I was just totally blown away. It's the way I could explain it, or how I've been trying to explain it to people, is like you're literally being torn into two separate parts. One side of you is just overcome with grief and with loss. You just lost your best friend, your soulmate, father of your children, your whole world just falling apart. And on the other side, and you know that you're on the other side, people are just so generous, and they come forward and they bring meals, and they started this fundraiser. People who never knew me, people from overseas, just so giving, and it's just unbelievable. It just shows you that there's still hope. There's still so much good in the world, despite all the chaos. The future is certainly very uncertain. So where to from here? I don't really know. Thankfully, the funds that have been raised by this Backer Buddy will at least carry us through the next, I would say, 2 to 3 months to be able to cover our basic overhead so that we can hang on to the business premises. And from there, I don't know. I just want Freddie's legacy to continue. A gentle giant. I would like his generosity and to be able to bless others. I want that to continue. It's a tremendous, tremendous loss. And I can just imagine there are so many families in South Africa and in the world that are going through the exact same thing at the moment. And I just wish people would stop complaining about not being able to do things or go here or do that, and really start taking this seriously, so that we can finally get rid of this virus, which has just caused devastation beyond any comprehension. If this can bring some honor to my Freddie, people can know about him, it would really mean the world, because he deserves it. He didn't deserve to suffer the way he did. And he didn't deserve dying at such a young age. But I will keep his memory alive. I will tell his children about him every day. And I will be strong for them.